Maeve did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In Hornsey and Fry and Barnet, the NHS training pipeline has been severed by Treasury spending limits that treat qualified nurses as a luxury rather than a necessity. While hospital wards run understaffed and patients wait longer for care, people ready to train as nurses are turned away because someone in Whitehall decided the government that prints the money could not afford to spend it.
My parents met at the Royal Free Hospital in 1989. Mum was a ward sister in cardiology. Dad worked as a porter in A&E. They used to joke that between them, they knew every corridor in North London's hospitals. Growing up, I heard their stories every night over dinner. The patients who recovered against the odds, the families they comforted, the moments when the NHS was at its best. I studied biomedical science at Queen Mary University because I thought I wanted to work in research. But watching my parents during the pandemic changed everything. They were both in their late 50s, exhausted, working extra shifts because there weren't enough staff, yet they never stopped believing in what they were doing. I decided I wanted to be a nurse. I keep a small cactus garden on my windowsill now, each plant representing a patient I hope to help recover. The collection is still small, but it grows every time I imagine the career I'm fighting to have. In early 2022, I applied for adult nursing at Middlesex University. I had the qualifications, the motivation, and I'd already volunteered on the wards during my degree. The admissions interview went well, the tutors were encouraging, then came the call that changed everything. "I'm sorry, Maeve," the admissions tutor said. "We'd love to offer you a place, but Health Education England has capped our training numbers this year. The funding simply isn't there. Treasury has tightened the purse strings." She sounded genuinely apologetic. "It's not about your application, it's the same across all London universities. We're having to turn away qualified candidates." I accepted this explanation. It sounded reasonable. Everyone was talking about tough financial times. I tried a different route, the nursing apprenticeship program at Barnet and Southgate College. Same story. "We've had to reduce our intake," the program coordinator explained. "The funding has been cut. There's just no money for additional places." While I waited, I applied to work as a healthcare assistant at North Middlesex University Hospital. I got the job immediately. The ward managers were desperate for any qualified help they could find. During my first week, the charge nurse pulled me aside. "We're running three nurses short on every shift," she said. "If you know anyone thinking about nursing, tell them to apply yesterday. We can't cope with the vacancy levels." I told her about my failed applications. She looked baffled. "That makes no sense. We're crying out for student nurses. The placement opportunities are there. The mentoring capacity exists. Someone needs to explain to me why we can't train the people we need." It was during my second month at North Mid that the contradictions became impossible to ignore. I was walking past Middlesex University's nursing department when I noticed something strange. The building looked half empty. I asked one of the current students what was happening. "They've got 47 unfilled places this year," she told me. "International students who were offered spots but couldn't afford the fees. The university's running the program anyway, just with smaller cohorts." Weird, right? They say there's no money for domestic students, but they're teaching in half-empty classrooms. I stood outside that building for 10 minutes, trying to make sense of it. The lecture halls existed, the simulation labs existed, the clinical placements existed, the patients who needed care existed, the people who wanted to train existed. What exactly was it that there was no money for? Then I met my neighbour Carmen. She'd moved in next door 6 months earlier with her husband and two children. She was a qualified nurse from the Philippines with 8 years of experience in intensive care. She'd been unemployed since arriving in the UK. "The Nursing and Midwifery Council keeps delaying my registration," she explained when I asked about her situation. "They say my qualifications need verification, but the processing has slowed down due to administrative budget constraints. I call every week. They tell me the same thing. There's no funding for additional staff to clear the backlog." Carmen showed me her credentials. Her English was perfect. Her clinical knowledge was extensive. She was exactly the kind of experienced nurse that my ward manager said they desperately needed, but she was sitting idle because someone had decided that the Nursing and Midwifery Council could not afford to process her paperwork. That's when I stopped accepting the excuses. The government that issues the pound notes was telling me it could not find enough pound notes to train domestic nurses or register international nurses. Meanwhile, hospital wards ran understaffed and patients waited longer for care. The resources were all there. The people, the buildings, the training programs, the clinical placements. The decision not to connect them was being dressed up as an accounting problem. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the clinical placements were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the training programs and registration systems that would connect willing people to necessary work. I'm still working as a healthcare assistant. I'm still applying for nursing programs every year. But I understand now that this is not just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and patients exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never the constraint. The constraint was the choice not to open it.
What Maeve experienced, it has a name: fake experts. This technique works by citing economists or commentators who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident, as though repeating it makes it true. Consider how tobacco companies once paraded scientists who questioned the link between smoking and cancer. These weren't independent researchers following evidence. They were advocates for a predetermined conclusion. The technique succeeds when audiences assume that anyone with credentials must be offering objective analysis rather than ideological advocacy. In Maeve's case, every official who said there is no money was applying household logic to a currency issuer. Health Education England, NHS England, and Treasury officials all spoke as though the UK government needed to find pounds before it could spend them. When challenged, they cite unnamed economists who supposedly prove that government spending must be rationed like a household budget. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation, they claim. Which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. And in Hornsey and Fry and Barnett, those resources were sitting idle. Carmen had the skills but couldn't get registered. Maeve had the motivation but couldn't get trained. The nursing school had empty classrooms. The hospital had vacant positions. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Hornsey and Fry and Barnett ranks 285 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation, placing it in decile 6, English Indices of Deprivation, 20-25, MHCLG. The constituency has 1,746 registered charities, Charity Commission Register, England and Wales, and received £36.8 million in grants, 360 giving grant nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.